This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com. I'm a wild, come on, march on the regular. Painted white, black, blue. Love, forgive me.
Telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move. Freedom,
Friday, everybody. How y'all doing today? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got Cardi on the board. It's Friday. Shoo, we got here. Cardi, I don't know. I don't think there's anything to talk about in the news today. Like, nothing happened this morning.
I mean, what about that Trump sentencing case?
Oh, yes, there's that. Folks, do not worry. Cardi and I have been working furiously to get the sound from Trump sentencing the very first time we've heard Judge Mershon's voice in the Trump fraud case from New York State Court happened today. We've got that sound for you. We're going to get to that all today. Not to worry. My thanks to you, Cardi, for working with me to chop all this up, because there was a lot. And of course, we'll talk all about it today. You're going to want to stay tuned. But the place that I wanted to start today is about basically what were the big notable things that happened in the law in 2024. If you haven't listened to the show before, I'm a lawyer. I've had what can only be described as an incredibly interesting legal career. And I'm going to give you just the 30-second version of my resume, because, of course, I rely on all this experience as I talk to each and every one of you about the law and what it means to us, what it means to us as Wisconsinites and as Americans, why these things are important to your family, how they might impact your life, because it can seem so remote and distant. And also, most of the time, those gosh darn lawyers, they just speak in that legal-easy business, and it can be a little hard to understand. So that's what we're going to try to do here. But very briefly, I wanted to share with you all a little bit of my background. If you've been listening to the show for some time, many of you know I'm both a lawyer and an economist, not a PhD economist. My master's degree is in applied mathematical economics. So I just got the master's, didn't finish the PhD. But as a lawyer, which is how I've always worked, I've done a lot of kind of wild and interesting things. And my legal career began right out of law school as a federal appeals court clerk for a judge on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. So in both state courts and in the federal system, there's three levels of courts. There's the trial courts, the appeals courts, and the Supreme Court. Of course, the Supreme Court of the United States establishes the law of the land, the entire land. And one level down beneath that are the federal appeals courts. That's the court that I worked for. And appeals courts set the law for the jurisdictions that they cover. And the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals covers Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana. That's the court I worked for. I was an elbow clerk to one Judge Michael Caney. I talked about this a little bit yesterday. Elbow clerks in the appeals courts are there for a year. I worked with Judge Caney for a year alongside two other elbow clerks. That is the typical setup for federal appeals court clerks. And Judge Caney, if you don't know about him, he passed about 2 years ago. He's had hundreds of clerks. It's a close-knit community. But Judge Caney was a two-time Reagan appointee to the federal court system. He was first appointed by Reagan to be a federal trial court judge, a district court judge, and then he was elevated to the appeals court. So that's what I did for the first year of my career. After that, I worked in New York City at what is referred to as a white shoe law firm. That in legal ease sort of means fancy pants, big corporate law. The firm I worked at was White & Case. And in my work for White & Case, I worked on the Enron matter. I worked on major class actions, real big stuff. I worked abroad for a good amount of time. I was in China. I was in England for a while, Hong Kong, and came back to the United States after that. Saw some really interesting things. Basically got to see the best of the profession, at least in the corporate litigation space, how those cases are managed and run. So really very, very interesting, and frankly, an incredible fertile ground for a brand new attorney to learn the best of litigation practice in the most complicated cases. The Enron matter, of course, had literally tens of millions of documents associated with it. One little anecdote is Jeff Skilling, one of the CEOs of Enron, was deposed during that matter. There were hundreds of lawyers in his deposition. The judge had to govern those depositions. The lawyers really couldn't speak. You could basically raise your hand if you had an objection. So like the lawyer asking the questions in these depots in Enron would read the question. There'd be a pause. The lawyers objecting to the question would raise their hand. They'd identify you, mark it down. Then the witness would answer. Then they'd ask the next question. It was wild. So that was my time in New York. That was for a number of years. I came back to Chicago, the Midwest, and worked again at a very big global white shoe law firm, Winston & Strawn. My client included Goldman Sachs. Again, I worked on what can be more easily described as insider trading cases. Again, lots of financial and corporate frauds. The work was fascinating. I was super engaged in it. But after all of this time, I kind of had one of those aha moments where you go, I've been using my superpowers to help the biggest banks in the world. Perhaps my powers can be deployed in a way that helps regular people. And so I left corporate law in 2010. And I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. If you remember back then, the economy was in a wee bit of a slump. And I was burnt out. I hadn't taken a vacation in about 3 years, was working easily over 80 hours a week. So I took a little time, did a little soul searching. And what I decided to do was take whatever talents I may have and wanted to serve people in a more direct way. And so I decided to enter public service and I became an assistant city attorney for the city of Milwaukee. And I can just say this about it. I slept well from then on in my career. My head would hit the pillow and I could easily fall asleep because every day my job was to get up and serve the people and the residents of the city of Milwaukee to the best of my ability. And it was incredibly gratifying work. I then went on to run the 401k plan, a retirement plan for the city of Milwaukee, rebuilt that sucker from the ground up to make it easier for employees of the city of Milwaukee to retire at the time that they wish to retire with dignity. And to know that they were going to be financially safe and secure throughout their retirement. In doing that work, then County Executive Chris Abley heard about what I had been doing. He called me up one day and said, hey, you want to come be the general counsel, the chief legal officer for Milwaukee County? And by some accounts, I foolishly said yes. It was an incredibly challenging job. There were historic things that occurred at the county in the over 7 years that I served Milwaukee County and its residents and citizens, including, of course, the 2020 election and recount and litigation, including the murder of George Floyd and the subsequent protests that occurred here in southeastern Wisconsin, and of course, COVID. It was a historic time, and it really shaped me as a lawyer, and I am ever grateful to both County Executive Chris Abley, County Executive David Crowley, and the entire government of Milwaukee County for allowing me to work side by side.
4 minutes.
And it was incredibly satisfying. And just FYI, Cardi, if you can let engineering know that apparently on the app folks can't hear us, we're going to get right on that, y'all. Please be patient with us. We're going to try to get that taken care of. And it was a little over a year ago that I, after much soul searching again, and somewhat reluctantly, left government service to come here to Civic Media and become their general counsel, their chief legal officer, and to do this show with each and every one of you every day. So that's my legal resume in a nutshell. And this year in the law was remarkable. It was remarkable in so many ways, not the least of which was the fact that a former president of the United States went to trial for criminal fraud. And it wasn't just about business documents. It was a criminal fraud executed as part of a conspiracy to, in effect, steal an election, to steal the 2016 election. How is he proposing to steal the election? By bribing someone, in effect, to keep information from the American public. So don't ever think that that New York fraud case is just about business documents. It's not. It was about your right to information, whether or not you're a Trump supporter or not, and the fact that we didn't get that information. So there was that criminal case. There was the January 6th criminal case. There was the super secret spy documents case. There was the Georgia conspiracy and RICO styled investigation of January 6th. There was the New York State civil fraud investigation. So much happening in that space. And we're going to get to all of that. But setting aside all of the incredible happenings related to Donald Trump, including both his conviction and sentencing today, which makes his conviction final, except, of course, for the fact that he will appeal. But he today is a convicted felon. And, of course, the immunity decision from the Supreme Court. Aside from all of that, there were a couple incredibly important developments in the law that I think will have far-reaching impact for years and years to come. Impacts that will change your and your family's right to clean air, clean food, clean water, your right to access health care. All of these things greatly impacted this year. And a second area of the law where your right to privacy and accessing the internet, just the right of access and your right to ensured privacy on the internet, is now under threat. And I don't mean the government, if they've got, you know, a warrant that is signed off on by a judge accessing or looking at your search history. I'm talking about private companies potentially being able to track and decide whether or not you can access certain information on the internet. That also went down this year. So yeah, a lot happening. And certainly last but not least, this question of the integrity of our judicial system as a whole and judicial ethics. We're going to get to all of that. I'm going to dig in as soon as we come back after these brief messages. My name's Maggie Dawn. I am your friendly lawyer lady and economist right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're all about real news and great conversation. So join this one, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Is there a legal development this year that you want me to address? We take your calls and thoughts next as I dig into the developments of 2024. Keep it locked. I'ma keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Out there, because we are about real news and great conversations. So join this one, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We are recapping 2024 in the law. And I want to start, I mentioned this yesterday, we sort of warmed this topic up. But the place that I want to start is about the Chevron Doctrine. I have talked about this many times on the show, because it is one of these things that looks very wonky and like deep technical legal stuff. And it is that. But what it also is a doctrine that up until this year ensured that experts within federal agencies were the one who promulgated rules and regulations based on their specific expertise. And then unless that rule or regulation was basically objectively unreasonable or directly conflicted with the legislation enacted by Congress about that topic, so whether it was objectively unreasonable or was directly in conflict with what is called, quote, enabling legislation from Congress, that rule or regulation was entitled to deference from courts reviewing challenges to those regulations. And what happened this year was that the Supreme Court said, nah, that's just wrong. Judges should be able to substitute their viewpoints on regulations. And the thing that concerns me here, and I could get into a lot of the technicalities of it, and I'm certain that in the coming weeks, I will spend probably at least an entire hour just talking about the implications and the details of this ruling. But beside from those legal technicalities, what's concerning here, whether you think there's too many regulations, not enough regulations, the wrong kind of regulations, we need to review regulations, which, by the way, there should be some required mechanism by which agencies actually have to review regulations on the books, get rid of the obsolete ones, update them, something like that. We all know that the regulatory system is in many ways too cumbersome, too burdensome, too hard to navigate, especially for small businesses. So I will always grant that we need to evaluate the regulatory system and regulations for effectiveness and efficiency. As an economist, I deeply believe that. But what I also believe is that Article III federal judges ain't scientists. They're not. Now, there may be one or two that do have some sort of legitimate credentialing in science, but that's very rare. Lawyers, and therefore judges, are generalists. We do not, most of us, have specialized knowledge in the technical detail that is required to enact rules and regulations in highly specified, highly technical areas like water quality. Like, would you, a regular person or even a judge that doesn't know anything about chemicals, know how many parts per billion of PFAS or a forever chemical is safe for us to consume? I sure wouldn't. I mean, come on, right? Like, so here's the problem. Setting aside the fact, again, that we should be reviewing regulations for effectiveness and efficiency, of course we should. The fundamental problem is that judges are not equipped. They lack subject matter, detailed expert knowledge to be the ones to craft regulations, to replace the expert judgment of those that have studied and worked in these highly technical areas with their own. And that is basically what the Supreme Court decided this year, that there's no deference. There's no deferring to actual experts who know actual things about these highly technical topics. The judges themselves can just say, meh, I don't agree. And what's most alarming is that the Supreme Court, when they overruled and wiped away the Chevron doctrine, did not replace it with some meaningful operational standard by which all courts should now approach the review or challenge to regulations and rules promulgated by executive branch agencies like the EPA, the Department of Energy, the FCC, the Federal Trade Commission. I could go on and on. So why is this bad? It's bad if you're a business person. It's bad now because the regulatory environment becomes very uncertain. There's chaos. Who knows what the regulations are going to be? They could change from day to day. And I'll just take this example. The FCC promulgated a rule about the disclosure of certain corporate information related to stations. And courts have gone back and forth saying whether or not that regulation should even be in place. So that's the business that Civic Media is in. I'm their top lawyer. And I had to watch literally on a day over day basis. Do we have to file this thing or do we not have to file this thing? Because one court said we did and then another court said we didn't. Regulatory chaos is terrible for business. That's what the Supreme Court did this year. So why would they do that? Why would they create the potential for regulatory chaos if it's bad for business? Because overarchingly, taking away any requirement for courts to defer to experts that set the rules from agencies opens up the ability for businesses to willingly challenge these regulations and create a deregulating environment, less regulate. They're going to press down the ability of agencies to regulate at all because they'll challenge everything. And the overwhelming beneficiaries of this ruling aren't small businesses. It's not your friend down the street who's trying to start a restaurant or owns a hairdresser or a childcare establishment. It's the biggest businesses in the world that have billions in profits because they are the ones that can sustain prolonged litigation to challenge these kinds of rules, hire the $1,000 an hour experts to put up against experts from the government. So this will help big businesses, and it certainly will not help small businesses. It will create regulatory chaos. And when I come back, I'm going to tell you why it may make you and your family less healthy in the coming years. My name's Maggie Dawn. We're doing a recap of 2024 in the law. You're not going to want to miss 1 minute of it. And of course, we're going to get to, you know, that little bit of news that happened this morning. Our incoming president, now a convicted felon pending appeal. Keep it locked, y'all. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and join us 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Everybody, happy Friday. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about legal developments, the big legal takeaways from 2024. If you have a question about a case or just to get my take on something that you're curious about, I welcome your questions and comments. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I've been talking about the Chevron Doctrine. The Supreme Court got rid of it. This means that judges, without basically any standards, can just decide that they don't think a rule or a regulation that is promulgated by the agencies within the federal government that are charged with keeping our air, our water, our food, our medicine, our land safe, with keeping competition in the marketplace fair for small businesses, from keeping businesses from abusing and defrauding you. Yep, judges can now just say, well, I don't like the regulation. I think it should be something else. This creates chaos in business. It's especially not good for small businesses. It basically only benefits, guess who, y'all? The billionaires, the donor class. And why do I say that? Because billionaires and donors, and by the way, foreign folks, are the vast majority of all stock owners. It benefits the hugest, most profitable corporations to the detriment of us all. And that means not only if you're a small business owner, are you going to enter into a much more complicated and fraught regulatory environment, you're going to be at a disadvantage to every big business out there, as if you weren't already. This is just going to make that worse. And to top it all off, as I like to remind people, regulations are for regular people. Because guess who never has to worry about getting clean air and clean water and the food that they're eating, being safe, or accessing medical treatments that they seek or want, or worrying about, you know, whether or not they're going to get defrauded. Guess who never worries about that? Really, 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 really rich people. So, yep, can we do better and make regulations more efficient, more effective? Heck yeah. But is this the solution to that? This ruling by the Supreme Court? Hell no. And every single one of us, every single one of you and your families, we are all going to pay the price for that. Join our conversation, 855-752-4842. We got Mark from Prairie du Sac. What do you say, Mark?
Well, I think our Supreme Court justices that voted for this nonsense should take a heap and teaspoon of a nice blend of powdered lead, mercury, and arsenic, and see how well they do with that. Because in the past, they all thought that stuff was perfectly safe to have, and that no harm done taking all that stuff. And that's just an example. That stuff is going to get dumped into our environment, and people are going to be consuming. I mean, maybe that's a drastic example, but it's just ridiculous. These guys don't know squat about science, and that are even armchair scientists. That
right,
you know, that some of us are. That it is just ridiculous, because people are going to die because of this, and they should be held accountable for it. For God's sake, what the first emperor of China apparently died of mercury poisoning because they thought it was just a wonderful compound
fine.
That was going to make him immortal.
Yes, they thought it was mercury, that thing, you know, that used to be in our thermometers that was silver. Yeah, drink silver, I become a god. Thanks so much, Mark. Remember the scene in Aaron Brockovich? Remember? Go back a few years. It was about a massive class action lawsuit. Julia Roberts played Aaron Brockovich. And as they get to the very end, when they're negotiating the settlement with PG&E, this energy company that polluted the heck out of people's land and caused all kinds of cancers and things, they were at the conference table. And as they're negotiating the settlement, Aaron Brockovich says to all the lawyers for PG&E, hey, those waters that you got in front of us, don't worry. That's that good water we got from the place where you dumped all your chemical waste. And all the lawyers sort of pushed the glass away. And it's dramatized. I doubt that really happened. But Mark's point is well taken. Remember, rich people don't worry about this stuff. And I'm not talking about, hey, you got a couple million, you're buying your kids their first house, helping them pay for it. No, I'm talking about stinking, filthy rich. Those are the people that will benefit from wiping out this standard. It is absolutely shameful. Greg from Waukesha, your take, sir, this afternoon.
Hey, I have actually a legal question for you. But first of all, I'm calling on my new pair of Meta Ray-Ban smart glasses, which help blind people. So I'm really happy that I hope the sound quality is okay.
You sound great, Greg. And may I say Happy New Year. And I'm really, really, really happy to hear that you have this new tool to help you. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome. I just got them for Christmas, and I'm going to definitely take them out tonight. I can read menus with them and things like that. But anyway, my legal question is this about the, and Happy New Year to you too, by the way.
Thank
about
you.
The Geiser, Morgan Geiser trial. I know you're not talking about that right now, but I know that she was tried as a juvenile, right? So she was sentenced to juvenile court or whatever, and then she was given over to the mental health system. I just have a lot of questions about that case. Can you explain that, what actually happened yesterday or a couple of days ago, if you're aware of it? And I'm also wondering about the other party, Anissa Weir, I think was her name. Do you have any expertise on that? I guess, how did that all work itself out?
So I haven't, just so everybody's got context with Greg from Waukesha. Thanks so much, Greg. All of my best to you. Enjoy your evening out with your new smart glasses. Love it. Love it. What Greg is referring to is the Slender Man killings that happened a long time ago in Wisconsin. Within the last, I don't know, what is it, like 5 or 6 years, something like that. Both of the juveniles, young girls that were convicted because they were juveniles. They were convicted as juveniles, and they were basically not sent to prison, but they were sent to a mental health facility for juveniles. And right now, Morgan Geiser's attorneys are trying to petition the courts for her release, saying that she has been, her mental health has been rehabilitated. She no longer needs to be incarcerated. Juvenile justice, Greg, I'll just say this. I don't want to get into the merits of that. But what they're going to look at, you know, is Ms. Geiser, in fact, completely rehabilitated? Is justice served by her being released, given that she was a juvenile? Juvenile justice is an enormous, and I'm going to call it the youth legal system, is a major problem in this country. We do not treat, not all children at the same age have the same levels of brain development. Trauma in childhood can create major developmental issues. There's a whole gamut of concerns around the youth legal system and how we treat youthful offenders. And that is certainly something that I'm going to take a note and we'll put down for future discussion on this show in greater detail. I really appreciate the question. And Cardi and I are going to take a note and we're going to remember to put that on the docket for a good deep dive right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. You've got a question, you got a legal issue, something that popped this year that you're like, Mags, what the heck is that? What's your hot take on this? Of course, I want to hear from you because we're all about these great conversations. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Matt from Johnson Creek, you're up. What are your thoughts this afternoon, sir?
Hi, Maggie. When it comes to regulations, I get so tired of people talking about over-regulation because what people fail to understand, and if you've been in the military or if you've been in the environmental realm ever, you understand that no regulation exists in a vacuum, right? It would be wonderful if we could say, yeah, the market will take care of everything. But the problem is people will try and get away with things, right? We have the EPA basically because of things like Love Canal, where someone tried to poison people, or didn't try to, but poisoned people because they just didn't care, right? Because nobody told them they couldn't, which is a stupid way to act when somebody's health and well-being is on the line. Like, well, you didn't tell me I couldn't, is not a good reason. Like, children died, children got cancer. You know, the Department of Energy after Three Mile Island, right? None of this stuff is, it's not really proactive. It can be, and I think that's where overregulation can happen, sure. But nine times out of 10, you don't like a regulation, go talk to the person that had to be sued out of existence by the government, and the government had to pay for all their damages to the people that they harmed.
Yeah, I feel all of that, Matt. Let's recap everyone collectively together. The regulatory failures in this country, where because special interest groups and lobbyists prevented or basically extorted our elected officials into not doing anything. These are the regulatory failures in our country. Asbestos, big tobacco, PFAS. And I would be remiss if I didn't talk about opioid manufacturers and distributors. So every time somebody, oh, we got too much regulation. Well, regulation about what and to whose benefit? I actually do a guest lecture every year at Marquette University's College of Business about regulatory economics. Sounds real boring, doesn't it? It's actually not. Because this is where the action is. Every time you hear someone trot out some nice-sounding, politically convenient attack on regulations or regulators, ask you, who benefits? Who ends up at risk? Whose health is hurt? Whose wealth is increased or decreased? Who pays the price? Because if you start to look at that, we can have a better idea about whether or not this regulation is actually doing what it should. Why is it either good or bad? Because no regulation standing on its own is either good or bad. Regulations themselves as a whole aren't good or bad. The question should always be asked, what is the purpose? What is the result that we're seeking? And who seeks to benefit? Right? Because how do we determine what amount of regulation is just right? Right? Like, where is the supply and demand? How do we plot the supply and demand for regulation? It's people dying because corporations place profit seeking above public health at its most basic. And the regulatory system are the boundaries, the rules of commerce that try to make commerce fairer and yet safer for consumers, for you, for your family, for your kids. And of course, and yes, we can hold these competing, maybe facially competing ideas in their head. Yep, we need to look at who benefits from regulations, who pays the prices for regulations, what are the impacts on prices for things when we overregulate where we do. But we also can have this acknowledgement that regulations are for regular people and they help keep folks who don't have the millions of dollars themselves to put in the most sophisticated water filtration systems on the planet. It helps keep your regular water clean, the water that you and your kids drink. So we can hold these two ideas in our head and have a meaningful discussion about it. But let me tell you this. My point is very simple. The Supreme Court saying that non-expert judges are in the appropriate position to decide which regulations are good and which regulations are bad is a terrible idea. You want to talk about activist judges? How about judges acting to determine what regulations actually promote public health? Ugh. Terrible, isn't it? Okay, we're going to take a break. I got to give a shout out, Dave from Madison. I see you, friend, on the text line. I really appreciate your participation. Tom from New Berlin. Yeah, how much is your uterus worth? Is it okay if regulations cause you to lose your uterus, become infertile? And who the heck stands in the way of companies abusing you and your family in that way? That's the fundamental purpose of government, the promotion of public health, safety, and welfare. That's what government does. When we come back, I'm going to talk about whether or not you will be able to continue to access the internet in a fair way and whether or not your internet searches will be protected from the prying eyes of private corporations seeking to profit over what interests you day to day. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're not going to want to go anywhere because, of course, we're getting to the Trump conviction. We got the sound all ready for you all. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And join our conversation, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Back in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Cardi's in the booth. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about major legal developments of 2024. There's lots of noise and there's lots of technicalities. But in my opinion, there were a couple of things that happened this year that were just monumental. We just spent the last chunk of time talking about the Chevron Doctrine. If you missed it and you're just joining us, you're going to want to go take a listen to that and take a think on it. You can check that out if you go to YouTube, search for The Maggie Dawn Show. It'll pop up. Civic Media's got our own YouTube channel. And of course, you can find all my old episodes on Apple Pods, Spotify, and at the Civic Media website at civicmedia.us/shows. But the next thing I wanted to tell you about is another one of those things that sounds real boring, but is actually really important. And that is net neutrality. You hear it and you immediately start dozing off unless technical computer and IT stuff is your bag. I make no claims to be any kind of an expert on tech matters. I'm not. I'm just a lawyer lady and a wee bit of an economist. Tech stuff, not my bag. But what I do know about net neutrality is that at base, what it ensures is that you all have an equal right to get on the internet. that your internet service provider, whether you get it through Verizon or Spectrum or whatever the provider may be in your area, DirecTV, yada, yada, that they can't, for example, say, I'm going to have your neighbor's internet access, the ability to search, download, stream. Yeah, I'm going to just prioritize their searches, their use of the internet over yours. And you might ask, well, how would they actually do that? I can't explain to you the technical stuff, but basically it's about the buffering, the amount of volume. Now, of course, we spend different amounts of money depending on how much data pull you want. But what we're actually talking about is not differentiating based on, hey, I'll pay more so that I've got a real big, basically data outlet or data plugin so I can get to the internet and get a lot of, no, not that. It's within people in this that are paying for the same access level, and they can actually decide which one of you gets preference. That's what net neutrality is about. So Donald Trump and his first administration got rid of net neutrality. President Biden put it back in. And of course, then got sued. And what are net neutrality rules? By the way, the hook here is, guess what that is, y'all? I hope you're all yelling at your radios. Maggie, that's a regulation for regular people. Because of course, what do rich people and huge corporations not have to worry about? They can buy whatever internet they want, right? So this is an example of a regulation for regular people, because we don't have infinite money to ensure the best, fastest, fanciest internet access. So if ISPs, if internet service providers can discriminate about who gets priority on the internet, how do you think they make those judgments? And here's where it gets a little scary. Could they potentially make judgments about who gets priority access to the internet based on what you might be searching for? What if an internet service provider is the next thing that Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk decides to buy? What if Elon Musk decides to buy all of them? What if Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk and every single other billionaire in the world decide to buy up all of the internet service providers? And they all decide that, you know, since Donald Trump's now in power, they don't want people to be able to find anything on the internet that isn't supportive of Donald Trump. So, just think, where do your First Amendment rights, our right to seek and access information on the greatest democratization system when it comes to information in the world on the internet, where do your First Amendment rights start to abut the right of private for-profit companies to make a buck off of the way that almost all of us access information now? I'm just going to tell you this. These two things, and by the way, it was challenged by a company, the regulation, the Biden-era regulation, putting net neutrality back in place, challenged, and there's now going to be a case before the Supreme Court about net neutrality. It's coming up from the Sixth Circuit. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals decided net neutrality under this new standard from the Supreme Court that basically says, yeah, don't listen to people who are actual tech experts. It's fine if just judges decide if that regulation is good. Yeah, the Sixth Circuit said net neutrality, no good. You combine these two things, and we could have a long discussion about the FCC regulations and other federal laws about child abuse online, about whether or not companies like Meta are actually responsible for those kinds of things. But you combine the idea that whether or not you can access information and what information now seems to be up to private corporations, and the fact that regulations are now up for grabs, that's big. Really big. Watch that space. And the next time you hear this stuff in the news, I want you to think to yourself, regulations are for regular people. Who benefits and who pays the price? Is it you and your family, and you and your family's health, safety, wellness, and right to free expression and accessing information, is that, are we all paying that price? We're going to take care of some top of the hour business. We'll be right back right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. You're going to want to keep it locked. More of 2024 developments in the law next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.